Welcome back, everyone, to the Deep Dive. Today, we're diving into a topic that, well, it kind of hits close to home for everyone, you know, in a way, burn injuries.
Yeah, burns. They're more common than we might think. Globally, we're talking about 180,000 deaths every year.
Wow. That's a lot. And here in the U.S., what are we looking at?
In the U.S. alone, about 486,000 people need medical treatment for burns each year. Out of those, a staggering 40,000 end up needing hospital care.
So it's clearly a pretty big issue, but it's not random, right? Like, who's most likely to get burned?
Well, the research, it consistently shows that men are about twice as likely to experience burn injuries compared to women. And another interesting point is that it's the 20 to 30-year-old age group that seems to be the most vulnerable.
Hmm. 20 to 30,
yeah.
That's like prime time for, well, I guess for being active and, you know, maybe taking risks.
Exactly. It makes you wonder, doesn't it? Like, what are the specific activities or situations that put people in this age group at a higher risk?
For sure. Now, when we talk about burns, we can't just lump them all together, right? There are different types, different severities.
Right. You've got it. We classify burns by their depth, how far they penetrate the skin. We talk about first, second, third, and fourth degree burns.
It's kind of like a scale, right?
Yeah.
To understand how much damage has actually been done.
Precisely. It helps guide treatment and predict how well someone might recover.
So in this deep dive, we're going to try to unpack all of that, right? From the simple stuff, how can we prevent burns in the first place? To the more complicated medical stuff, like how are severe burns treated in the hospital?
That's the plan. And we'll do it without getting too lost in the medical jargon. We want to make sure everyone listening can follow along.
Sounds good. So where should we start? What about prevention? I mean, preventing a burn is obviously better than treating one.
Couldn't agree more. And the best part is many preventive measures are surprisingly simple, like take matches and lighters, for example. Keeping them completely out of reach of children, it's basic, but it's super important.
It's one of those things that, you know, we often overlook until something happens. And speaking of things we should do regularly, when was the last time you checked the batteries in your carbon monoxide detector?
Oh, good point. You know, they say to replace those batteries once a year. It's like a small thing, but it can literally be a lifesaver.
It really can. Another simple thing that can make a big difference is the temperature of your water heater. Setting it below 120 degrees Fahrenheit, or about 48.9 Celsius, can really reduce the risk of scalds.
Especially for, you know, little kids and older adults who might have more sensitive skin.
Exactly. It's about thinking ahead and minimizing those risks. And you know what else we often don't think about? Running electrical cords under rugs. It might seem like a good way to hide them, but it's actually a fire hazard.
It is. And finally, something else that's really important. Having a fire extinguisher in your home. But it's not enough to just have it. You got to know how to use it.
Absolutely. In an emergency, you don't want to be fumbling around trying to figure it out.
Right. Okay, so we've talked about prevention. Now let's dig into the different types of burns, starting with the most minor first-degree burns. Think sunburn or a little splash of hot water.
Those are the ones that, like, you know, they hurt, but they usually heal pretty quickly.
Yeah. They only affect the outer layer of skin, the epidermis, so you'll feel some tingling, some pain, which usually feels better if you cool it down.
And then a few days later, it starts to peel, and maybe it itches a bit.
Yeah, that's the healing process. The skin might look red, and if you press on it, it turns white. That's called blanching. There could be a tiny bit of swelling, maybe a blister, but usually not.
So what's the usual treatment?
Over-the-counter pain relievers, cool compresses, you know, pretty straightforward stuff.
Got it. Okay, moving up the scale, what about second-degree burns? I think those are the ones that involve blisters, right?
Right. Second-degree burns, sometimes called partial thickness burns, those are the ones you get from, say, worse scalds or maybe a quick burst of flame.
Go deeper than first-degree burns.
They do. They penetrate through the epidermis and into the dermis, which is the layer of skin beneath.
Ouch. I bet those hurt a lot more.
Yeah, they do. The pain is more intense, and it can be really sensitive to even the slightest touch or even just the air.
And blisters are the hallmark, right?
Exactly. You'll see blisters and the skin will be moist and kind of weepy because fluid leaks out. And there's usually more swelling than with a first degree burn.
How long does it take for them to heal?
Usually it takes a couple of weeks, but sometimes a skin graft might be needed to help the healing along.
Mm. Okay, so Those are second-degree burns. Now, third-degree burns, those are the really serious ones, right?
Yeah, third-degree or full-thickness burns, these are much more severe. They happen when someone comes into contact with flames, electrical current, or certain chemicals.
So it's not just heat, it can be other things too.
Right, and what happens is the burn goes all the way through the epidermis and the dermis, and sometimes it can even damage the subcutaneous tissue, the connective tissue, and even muscle.
So it's not just the skin, it goes much deeper.
Exactly, and here's something interesting. Because the nerve endings in the skin can be destroyed, the burned area itself might not actually hurt.
Really? That's surprising.
But even though it might not be painful to touch, there can be internal effects like myoglobinuria, where muscle protein ends up in the urine, and that can cause kidney problems.
Yikes. So how do you know it's a third-degree burn if it doesn't hurt?
Well, the appearance is pretty different. The skin might look dry. It can be pale white or red-brown, or have a leathery texture. And of course, they're swelling.
And treatment for these burns, it's a lot more complicated, right?
Absolutely. Skin grafting is almost always needed, and there's a real risk of permanent changes to the skin's appearance and loss of function in the burned area.
So that's third degree. And then we have fourth degree, which is, I'm guessing, the worst of the worst.
You got it. Fourth degree burns, they're the most severe. They usually happen from prolonged contact with high voltage electricity.
Like from a power line or something.
Right. Yeah, something like that. And these burns, they go through all the layers of the skin and they damage the deep tissues, the muscles, and even the bone.
That's just, wow, that's hard to even imagine.
It is, and often the burn will look charred. Plus, you have the risk of systemic shock and myoglobinuria, which we talked about earlier.
So what's the outcome for these types of burns?
Honestly, it's not good. Due to the extensive damage, amputation of the affected limb is often necessary.
That's just devastating.
Yeah.
It really puts the whole spectrum of burn injuries into perspective, you know, from a minor sunburn to something that can lead to amputation.
It does. And that's why prevention is so crucial. But, you know, even with the best prevention, accidents can still happen.
For sure. So when someone arrives at the hospital with a burn, how do doctors figure out how bad it is, you know, aside from just looking at it?
There's a really useful tool called the Rule of Nines. It's a quick way to estimate the percentage of the body's surface area that's been burned.
So instead of just saying, oh, this burn is big, you can say this burn covers X percent of the body.
Exactly. It's more precise and it helps guide treatment, especially with fluids. Basically, they divide the body into sections and each section represents roughly 9% of the total body surface area.
Okay, so like the head is 9%, an arm is 9%, a leg is 18%, something like that.
You got it. And the genital area is about 1%. This calculation, it's really crucial, especially in the early hours after a major burn.
Why is that?
Because it helps doctors figure out how much intravenous fluid the patient needs for resuscitation, you know, to keep them stable.
Makes sense. So we've talked about the different types of burns and how doctors assess them, but, you know, it's not just the skin that's affected, right? There are all these internal effects too.
Right. A major burn, it's not just a local injury. It triggers a whole cascade of reactions throughout the body. Like take the cardiovascular system, for example.
The heart and blood vessels.
Yeah. What happens is the capillaries, those tiny blood vessels, become more permeable, meaning they leak more. So you lose plasma, the fluid part of the blood, into the surrounding tissues.
And that's what causes the swelling, the edema.
Exactly. And when you lose that fluid from the bloodstream, the heart has to work harder to compensate. So it beats faster. That's the tachycardia.
And because there's less fluid in the blood, less oxygen gets delivered to the body's cells.
Right. You get decreased tissue perfusion, which can be really dangerous.
So it's not just about the burn itself. It's about all these knock-on effects.
Exactly. And another major thing that gets messed up is fluid and electrolyte balance.
Those are the minerals in our blood, right? Like sodium and potassium.
Yeah, exactly. So because of the burn, there's this huge shift in fluids. Initially, fluid moves out of the bloodstream and into the spaces between cells. That's another reason why you get swelling.
So is that why they elevate a burned limb?
Yeah.
To help reduce the swelling?
Exactly. And sometimes if the swelling is really bad and it's cutting off blood flow, they might have to do an escharotomy or a fasciotomy.
What are those?
They're procedures where they basically cut through the burned skin or the fascia, the connective tissue, to relieve the pressure.
Wow. Okay. So back to the electrolytes. What happens to them?
Well, when cells are damaged, they release potassium into the bloodstream. And too much potassium, that's hyperkalemia, can be really dangerous for the heart.
And what about sodium?
Sodium levels can actually drop, which is called hyponatremia. And you can also have a decrease in platelets. Those are the cells that help with clotting. That's thrombocytopenia. And the concentration of red blood cells can increase, which shows up as a high hematocrit.
So it's like this whole domino effect throughout the body. It's kind of scary.
It is. And we haven't even talked about the lungs yet.
The lungs, what happens there?
Lung complications are a big deal with burns, actually one of the leading causes of death in burn patients.
Really? Wow.
Yeah. And one of the biggest concerns is inhalation injury.
That's when you breathe in smoke and hot gases, right? Like in a house fire.
Exactly. And that can damage the airways, causing all sorts of problems.
So what are the signs of an inhalation injury?
Well, one thing to look for is singed nasal hairs or facial hair. And if the person coughs up phlegm that looks sooty, that's called carbonaceous sputum, that's another red flag.
And what can they do to treat it?
Well, sometimes they need to put in a breathing tube, intubate them to help them breathe. And the airways can also narrow due to bronchospasm, which makes it hard to breathe.
And then there's carbon monoxide poisoning, right?
Yeah, that's a big risk in fires. It happens when you breathe in carbon monoxide, which is a colorless, odorless gas.
And how do they treat that?
They give the person 100% oxygen, which helps their body get rid of the carbon monoxide faster.
Okay, so the lungs are a big concern. What about the kidneys? Do they get affected too?
They do. Remember how we talked about decreased tissue perfusion? Well, that affects the kidneys too. They don't get enough blood flow, which means they can't filter waste products as effectively.
So their kidneys are basically not working as well as they should.
Right. And then there's the issue of myoglobinuria, where the damaged muscles release myoglobin into the blood, and myoglobin can actually damage the kidneys.
So it's like a double whammy for the kidneys.
Yeah, it is. Now, let's not forget about the immune system. Our skin is our first line of defense against infection, and when you have a burn, that barrier is broken.
So they're more susceptible to infections.
Absolutely. That's why infection control is so important in hospitals. They have to create a really clean environment to protect burn patients.
Makes sense. And what about body temperature? I mean, if you lose a lot of skin, you're going to lose a lot of heat, right?
You're right. The bigger the burn, the harder it is for the body to regulate its temperature. With severe burns, people can lose a lot of heat, and they might need special warming devices to stay warm.
Wow. Okay. And the information mentioned something about the gastrointestinal system too, right? What kind of problems can happen there?
Yeah, a few things can happen. One is paralytic ileus, which is basically a temporary paralysis of the intestines.
So their digestive system basically shuts down.
For a while, yeah. And they can also get stress ulcers, sometimes called Curling's ulcers, in the stomach or the small intestine.
And there's something about abdominal compartment syndrome, right?
Yeah, that's a risk when someone gets a lot of intravenous fluids. It's basically when the pressure inside the abdomen gets too high and it can damage the organs.
So it's like the body is under attack from all sides. It's really amazing that people can survive these kinds of injuries.
It is. The human body is incredibly resilient.
Okay, so let's say someone witnesses a burn. What should they do immediately?
Okay, so first things first, get the person away from whatever is causing the burn. Whether it's flames, hot liquid, electricity, chemicals, whatever it is, get them to safety.
And then what?
Well, it depends on the type of burn. For thermal burns, those caused by heat, you want to cool the burn down.
With cold water.
Yeah, cool running water or a cool wet cloth. But don't do it for more than 20 minutes because you don't want to cool them down too much.
And what about jewelry or clothing?
If there's any jewelry or tight clothing near the burn, take it off gently before the area starts to swell.
Okay, and for chemical burns.
For those, the most important thing is to flush the area with lots of water, like for at least 20 minutes.
Okay, so after you've cooled the burn or flushed it with water, then what?
Cover it with a clean, dry dressing to protect it.
Got it. And then get them to the hospital, right?
ASOP.
Okay, so they get to the hospital. What happens then?
Well, the medical team will do the usual first aid stuff, you know, ABCs. Make sure their airway is clear, they're breathing okay, and their circulation is good.
And for more serious burns, they'll start giving fluids intravenously, right?
Exactly. That's called fluid resuscitation, and it's really important to stabilize them.
And they'll be monitoring their urine output, right?
Yeah, they usually aim for about a 0.5 to 1 milliliter of urine per kilogram of body weight per hour.
And for electrical burns, it's higher, right?
Yeah, because of the risk of myoglobinuria and kidney damage.
And of course, they'll give them pain medication.
Right. And usually a tetanus shot to prevent infection.
So that's the initial treatment. And then what?
Well, the next 48 to 72 hours are really crucial.
Why is that?
because that's when some of the more serious complications can develop, like lung problems, for example.
What kind of lung problems?
Well, the lining of the airways can start to shed, and the airways can become obstructed, and there's a risk of pneumonia and acute respiratory distress syndrome, ARDS.
And what about the fluid they're giving them?
As the body starts to recover, the capillaries start to work better, and the fluid that leaked out starts to come back into the bloodstream.
So they have to be careful not to give them too much fluid.
Exactly. There's a risk of fluid overload, which can strain the heart.
And they'll also start removing dead tissue, right?
Yeah, that's called debridement, and it's an important part of wound care.
Okay, so that's the acute phase. What about wound care in the long term?
Well, caring for burn wounds is a really complex and ongoing process. They use special dressings, occlusive dressings, to protect the wound and promote healing.
And they have to keep a close eye on the circulation, right?
Yeah, they'll check the pulses below the burn to make sure the swelling or the dressing isn't cutting off the blood flow.
And when they bandage fingers and toes, they wrap them separately.
Right, to prevent them from sticking together as they heal.
And what about that debridement thing?
Debridement, removing the dead tissue, can be done in several ways. Sometimes the body does it naturally. Sometimes they use mechanical methods like scrubbing or wet-to-dry dressings. Sometimes they use chemicals or enzymes to break down the tissue, and sometimes they do it surgically.
And for deeper burns, they might need skin grafts, right?
Yeah, that's when they take healthy skin from another part of the patient's body and use it to cover the burn.
After a skin graft, they have to be really careful, right?
Oh, yeah, they have to protect the graft and keep it immobilized so it can heal properly.
And what about the place where they took the skin from, the donor site?
That needs care too. They might use medications to stop any bleeding.
So it's a lot of work, both for the doctors and the nurses.
It is. Nursing care is absolutely crucial for burn patients. They do so much to support the patient's recovery. Well, they're constantly monitoring the patient's fluid balance, making sure they're not getting too much or too little fluid. And they're also really focused on preventing infection.
They're like the front line of defense.
Exactly. And they have to manage the patient's hypermetabolism, which means they need a high-calorie, high-protein diet to support healing.
And they're constantly assessing the burn wound, right?
Yeah, they're checking its size, color, odor, any signs of infection.
Yeah.
And they're making sure the patient is comfortable, giving them pain medication, anti-itch medication, things like that.
And they also encourage them to move around, right?
Right, to prevent stiffness and contractures. And they also provide a lot of emotional support, both to the patient and their family.
It's a really demanding job.
It is. And you know, there are only about 70 specialized burn centers in the whole country.
Wow, that's not a lot.
Nope. It really shows how specialized this type of care is.
Now, the information mentions that burn injuries can be even more complicated in older adults. Why is that?
Well, older adults tend to have thinner, less elastic skin, which means the burns can be deeper and heal more slowly. And they often have other health problems that can complicate things.
Like lung problems or heart problems.
Exactly. And their kidneys might not work as well, which means they have to be really careful with fluids and medication.
So it's like everything is amplified in older adults.
It is. And there can also be long-term complications from burns.
Like what?
Well, one example is syndactyly.
What's that?
It's when the fingers or toes fuse together because of scar tissue.
Ouch.
Yeah, it can be a real problem, and sometimes they need surgery to fix it.
Wow, we've covered a lot of ground here.
Yeah.
It's incredible how complex burn injuries are, you know, from the initial injury to the long-term effects.
It is, and it really makes you appreciate the incredible work that doctors and nurses do to help these patients.
Absolutely. So to wrap up this deep dive, we've learned that burn injuries are a global problem. They can range in severity from minor to life-threatening, and they have far-reaching effects throughout the body.
And we've also learned that prevention is key. But even with the best prevention, accidents can happen.
Right. And if someone does get burned, it's important to know what to do immediately and to get them medical help as soon as possible.
Absolutely. And it's also important to remember that the recovery process can be long and challenging, both physically and emotionally.
This deep dive has been really informative, but it's also been pretty intense, you know?
Yeah.
Hard to think about all the pain and suffering that people go through with these injuries.
I agree. But on the flip side, it's also amazing to think about the body's ability to heal and adapt.
Yeah, that's true. So listeners, as you go about your day, you know, just take a moment to think about the things we've discussed. Be careful, be aware of potential hazards, and if you ever encounter someone who's been burned, remember the steps we talked about.
And you know, something to ponder, after hearing about all the physiological changes that happen with a severe burn, think about this. What does it tell us about the unseen burdens that survivors and their families carry, even long after the initial injury?
That's a really good point. It's not just about the physical scars. There are emotional and psychological scars, too.
Exactly. And that's something we should all be aware of and sensitive to.
Thank you all for listening to The Deep Dive. Until next time.